Hello, this is James Bradley, JB East in Saigon, and I'm waving to my buddy out there. How is JB West out in France?
Cold and rainy on the beaches of Normandy. Thank you.
There is Jeff Brown, and this podcast today is mostly by Jeff about his subject. He's going to take us to Africa. I'm going to start out with a little thing to open up here, and it's just a perspective. This is just a perspective little chat. And the perspective is that maybe we have to open up our minds and think beyond nation states. Right now, we're asking ourselves, you know, the U.S. is going to do this in Ukraine, and what's Putin going to do, and what's Moscow going to do, and is Beijing going to do anything about Taiwan, and what about Modi in New Delhi? And, you know, that was the construct that Jeff and I were born into in the 1950s. So there was a president of the United States in the 1950s, and we learned that there were powerful corporations like General Motors. Oh, they ripped out all the tramways, you know, so they would increase highway usage. Yeah, that was a corporation that was large, but it was, you know, you could conceive of it. It had a headquarters. It had a headquarters building. You could go to all its plants. Jeff and I have done podcasts about wealthy people influencing history. Cecil Rhodes from South Africa, Rhodesia, the Rhodes Scholarship, was behind World War I. We've talked about John D. Rockefeller distorting and controlling medical education and pharmaceuticals. But what I'm suggesting right now is that there's something huge that is happening that's very different than all of the rest of history. And I'm going to use a podcast. So I'm going to round the numbers off. So folks, don't hold me to 100 billion here and 100 billion there. I want to just throw out some numbers and then add the narrative. So the United States is how big? It's 21 trillion in GNP. How big is China? It's 14.6. How big is Japan? It's 5.1. So we already got mixed up and forgot all the numbers. So let's round it off. The United States is 20, China's 15, and Japan's 5. Okay? So China's 3 times as big as Japan, and the United States is 4 times the size of Japan, just to keep it simple. Now, what I'm talking about here is there's something very different. BlackRock, the equity firm BlackRock, has $10 trillion under management. That's one half the size of the United States. China's 15 trillion. BlackRock is 10 trillion. BlackRock is 10 trillion. That's twice the size of Japan. Now, it's hard to compare all these numbers. You know, that BlackRock, yes, that's not just one person, Larry Fink, the president of BlackRock, pressing one button and having all of those numbers under one roof and making decisions. But also the president of the United States is not one person controlling things either. What I'm saying is there's a concentration of money that has never, ever happened like this. Okay, let's talk about rich people. A couple months ago, Bill Gates visited Beijing, and President Xi met with Bill Gates. Why? I'm not sure. But Bill Gates has a lot of influence, and for some reason, the president of China felt that he should be photographed with Bill Gates. Well, how big is Bill Gates? Bill Gates has about $200 billion. $200 billion. Well, 5 times 200 billion is 1 trillion. 1 trillion. That's one-tenth the size of BlackRock. Do you get it, folks? Bill Gates is stupendously wealthy, and he's what? One-tenth, one-fifth, what is that? One-twentieth the size of BlackRock. So here's something to get your head around. Take BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street, the largest equity firms in the world. Now, again, when Jeff and I were born, there were no equity firms. They did not exist. This private equity thing is brand new in history. There used to be rich people. There used to be wealthy companies. But there didn't used to be these just concentration of money. So take BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street. They own 88%. They are the one, two, or three stockholders of 88% of the Standard & Poor's. Folks, that's thousands of companies. And in other words, you know, let's say Larry Fink at BlackRock and then Joe Blow at Vanguard and Mary Blow at State Street. These three people can get in a room and they are the one, two, or three stockholders of the entire Standard & Poor's. This puts Bill Gates to shame. BlackRock is, you know, is just $5 trillion less than China. BlackRock is twice as big as Japan. BlackRock is five times the size of Germany. Now you might say, you know, but come on, James, BlackRock, it isn't like just one guy controls it. There's shareholders and there's voting and there's all these. Yeah, that's true. But let's look at Japan. There's not one guy or one group of guys and girls that control Japan. The Japanese have to talk to people all the way from, you know, Kyushu down to, from Kyushu up to Hokkaido. There's millions of people to deal with. They have democratic processes. BlackRock, these guys are about money. They're about profit. They're about ownership. They are non-democratic. They can make things move. So let's take a look at this. Macron is the president of France, right? He's got about $2.5 trillion. And he's got to listen to all these democratic forces. He has yellow vests in the streets protesting. He has a lot of rock and roll violence going on. He's not very popular. He's only one-fourth the size of Larry Fink at BlackRock. If you add in Vanguard, Macron is, France is about one-tenth the size of BlackRock and Vanguard put together. You add in State Street, Blackstone, KKR, five, six of these private equity companies all of a sudden can dominate France, India, Italy, South Korea. I mean, folks, imagine Canada going to, you know, meet a president somewhere. Canada's $1.6 trillion. Now imagine Larry Fink walking in the door. Larry Fink is more than five times the size of Canada, and he's easier to deal with, and he probably has more power. So something has changed here, and I'm just saying that the idea of us just looking at countries, United States, okay, that's the number one GDP in the world. China's number two. Well, who's number three? If you look it up on the internet, Japan has the number three GDP. But Larry Fink of BlackRock is twice as big as Japan. BlackRock's the number three GDP in the world. Vanguard is the number four GDP in the world. You know what I mean? State Street. Do you know much about State Street? Have you heard about it? I'll bet you know a lot more about Germany than you do about State. You know more about the history of Germany than you do about State Street. State Street's bigger than Germany. So what are the ramifications here? Well, let's see. If you look at Raytheon, Lockheed, these huge military industrial companies, they are owned. They have very powerful shareholders in BlackRock, Vanguard, these private equity companies. So when we say, oh, the United States decided to fund NATO and NATO decided to fund Ukraine to fight Russia, really? Is that what's going on? Or did four guys and girls on the East Coast, major holders in these private equity companies, did they decide that we needed a war to, you know, to sell military industrial products And they called up Joe Biden, who they own, and said, let's go, Joe. See, look at folks. Bill Gates has political power because he has a lot of money. He has influence. The president of China or India or United States will pick up the phone if Bill Gates calls. That's proven. But now we're talking about BlackRock, which is not 10 times bigger than Bill Gates, but 40 times bigger than Bill Gates. We're talking enormous power that has never existed in the history of the world before, and they have a monopoly control over all the rest of the companies. So you're president of the United States, you look out across the country, who are you president of? You're president of all the companies that BlackRock owns? How much power do you have compared to BlackRock? So all I'm suggesting is that people just Google the size of Vanguard, Blackstone, KKR, State Street, BlackRock. Look at the amount of money that they have under management. Look at the, for example, South Korea is $1.6 trillion, about the size of Canada. Well, BlackRock's eight times bigger than it. Who are you going to meet first? If, you know, out of practicality, who are you going to listen to? Larry Fink of BlackRock or the president of South Korea? So, smart cities, World Economic Forum, lowering the population, poisonous clot shots, bioweapons. Are these policies of national governments or are they policies of these huge private equity firms that have inordinate power with countries? So that's the only point I wanted to make. I wanted to stretch everyone's mind for them to realize that the United States is number one GNP in the world. China's number two. Everyone knows that. But nobody's saying that BlackRock is the number three GNP in the world. You heard it here. Take a look. Let's expand our mind and just get some transparency into who is doing what in terms of the policies that affect us any day. So I wanted to make that little point, Jeff. And then, folks, I want to turn it over to Jeff here, who is in France, as everyone knows, and is looking at the French part of Africa, and he's got a great show for the remainder here for us. Take it away, Jeff.
Thank you, James. Well, before we get started, James and I already did one show about this, and again, I did travel and live and work in Africa and the Middle East for 10 years. So it's an area I know very, very well. James sent me a video of a very popular alternative media show that covered Niger, and it was worse than mediocre. I was shocked at how bad it was. James and I are running circles around the competition while Amaranth Flower at Global South and Africa Stream are also doing fine reporting, and I will put their links on this show's webpage, so be sure to go there. As a follow-up to our first show, where do we stand? Along with the NATO-Russia war in Ukraine, what is happening in Africa is just as world-changing for humanity's future. After 500 years of Western rape and plunder, still active today, all across Africa, there is an awakening confidence and sense of destiny to finally shake off these colonial and imperial shackles. In the 1950s and 60s, they got their flags and seats at the UN, but not economic, financial, and political freedom and independence. Be that as it may, a number of countries are thumbing their noses at the West, including Algeria, Egypt, Eritrea, Ethiopia, South Africa, Tanzania, Zimbabwe. Those are in the north and the east of Africa. But most important is what's happening in sub-Saharan Africa, often called the Sahel region, S-A-H-E-L. Specifically, from west to east, Guinea, Mali, Burkina Faso, and now Niger, and we can add the Central African Republic to the south. And also Chad to the east of Niger also had a recent military coup and appears to be a silent supporter. These five French colonies are shaking free from Paris in an impressive fashion. I am naming it the Sahel Revolution because it is founded on communist socialist principles, just like Mao Zedong in China, Ho Chi Minh in Vietnam, Kim Il-sung in Korea, and Fidel Castro in Cuba, among many others. The Sahel Revolution. You heard it first on JB West and JB East. Why the surge in revolutionary fervor? Because after 70 years of, quote, Western cooperation, aid, and protection, end of quote. And I want you to listen to this list because it's extremely graphic. Scores of revolution-minded African leaders have been assassinated by the West. The life expectancy in the Sahel is less than 60 years of age, the lowest in the world. Only 23% of the populations, on average, have electricity, among the lowest in the world. Access to water, sanitation, and hygiene is at the bottom of the global barrel. Literacy rates, this is 2023, and literacy rates are 20 to 25% on average, again, at the bottom of the global barrel. Quality of life indices are in the 20s, lowest in the world, compared to 60s, scores of 60s to 70s for the West. One indicator why, Wagner's former leader, Yevgeny Prigozhin, said that Niger's high-grade uranium is sold in Europe for 285 euros a ton, but the Nigerian people only get paid 11 euros per ton. The above misery is exactly like China, Vietnam, North Korea, and Cuba were before communist liberation. Victoria Nuland, the U.S.'s diplomatic consigliere, just went to Niger to threaten them not to use Russia's military Wagner group and to remove Western, quote, aid and cooperation, end of quote. In spite of her suggesting to the MSM mainstream media that she left victorious, in fact, she got the cold shoulder, not being allowed to meet the leader of the revolutionary government, General Chiani, and not being able to see the deposed president, Bazoum. Niger's published meeting notes stated that the United States can keep its, quote, aid and cooperation, end of quote, and use that money to help poor Americans. Jokes are circulating in the social media with Niger telling Nuland to use American aid money for a facelift and a weight loss program, among other insults. Russia's press spokeswoman, the amazingly intelligent and beautiful Maria Zakharova, piled on, stating, quote, Victoria Nuland thought that with Niger, you can do the same as with Ukraine. Offer a plastic bag of buns and fool them? Such a banana regime as in Kiev is no longer to be found, end of quote. This in reference to Nuland going to Kiev, Ukraine in 2014 to launch the Maidan Nazi coup, including handing out cookies and buns to the fascists, something James and I have reported on in spades. ECOWAS, ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, is Western Empire's house Negroes being goaded by Washington, Paris, and London to militarily attack Niger instead of sending Western troops for some of that old-time colonial organized black-on-black bloodletting. What is so sad about ECOWAS is that the members threatening to invade Niger, that being Nigeria, Senegal, Ivory Coast, and Benin, are only a notch above the revolutionary Sahel countries in the aforementioned socioeconomic and infrastructure measurements. Again, this is after 70 years of supposed Western, quote, cooperation and aid, end of quote. The Sahel is still like pre-communist liberation China, Vietnam, North Korea, and Cuba. In the meantime, the Sahel Revolution is moving forward. The Sahel Revolution is wildly popular among their peoples. They are seriously discussing an official united federation, knowing the importance of solidarity and strength in numbers in the face of the West's centuries-old imperial divide and conquer. Burkina Faso and Mali have put their militaries on standby alert to support Niger if ECOWAS decides to invade the latter. Yet Vought Wagner is heavily involved in Mali and Burkina Faso. Thus, if the West Africa's House Negroes go on the attack, they will be dealing with Russia. Wagner has stated that it will always fight for justice and help those who struggle for their sovereignty and the rights of their people. There you go. Sounds like Mao and Ho. Niger's revolutionary government is putting former President Bazoum and other former leaders on trial for high treason, all loyal whores for Western Empire. If ECOWAS attacks the Sahel Revolution, Niger will kill Bazoum, his family, and others of his group. Niger has also appointed a prime minister, former finance minister Ali Mamam Lamine, who has long experience with the Africa Development Bank. Thus, we are seeing the beginning of a civilian government. In the interim, they are improving the structure of their revolutionary government. Niger is holding talks with the House Negroes at ECOWAS to explain their side of the story, I think to buy time. All of this is the good news. The bad news is that the Sahel is not Vietnam. It does not have tropical jungles to hide and work in, nor the mountains in China, Korea, and Cuba. My wife and I have looked across the border from southern Algeria into northern Niger, where the uranium mines are in Arlit and Akokan, 900 kilometers northeast of the capital Niamey, more than 1,200 kilometers by road. Again, I'll post a map on this show's webpage. We could see the mountains of Arlit and Akokan from our 3,000-meter elevation, standing atop Algeria's Hoggar Mountains. While it is jaw-droppingly majestic and spectacularly beautiful, there are no trees, just hundreds of kilometers of rocky desert with the occasional Bedouin oasis and mountain watering hole. So a Ho Chi Minh-style people's war is not possible against the occupying NATO forces still there. Last year, Mali and Burkina Faso were able to get rid of the occupying French and American troops, but the ones in Niger are not planning to leave. Since 2012, NATO has invested $500 million into these three bases and drone ports in Niger. So getting rid of them is a huge problem for the Sahel Revolution to achieve full emancipation. As James and I have discussed, they can't launch rocket-propelled grenades at these bases or ambush occupying patrols like Mao, Ho, Kim, and Castro were able to do because they would be seen coming from hundreds of kilometers away. Also, no villages to get popular support and protection. No people's reconnaissance to provide intelligence, just hundreds and hundreds of kilometers of spectacularly beautiful rocky desert. Wagner could not do anything either. The French have already ignored Niger's declared no-fly zone over the country, sending in a plane to its base. So the ongoing NATO occupation is a serious problem for the Sahel Revolution. Mali and Burkina Faso have gained control of their productive forces and economic centers. Niger has not. France's company, Orano, still controls the uranium mines, Niger's biggest source of revenue. Apparently, Niger can stop the uranium exports when they have said they are stopping them for France, since they have sealed the borders. Even if they got control of the mines, the uranium is trucked out to Lagos, Nigeria, on the Trans-Sahelian Highway, 90% of which is paved. I'll put a map on our webpage. But Nigeria is an ECOWAS house Negro, so they would block transit to its ports. Not surprisingly, China is very much in the Sahel region doing what else? Building roads, rail lines, telecommunications, schools, hospitals, airports, dams, and oil wells and mines. But again, how to get out the oil and uranium? They could go north through friendly anti-West Algeria, but that would triple the distance to get to Algiers' Mediterranean port. Most people do not know that Algeria is Africa's largest country, 4.5 times bigger than France. I lived there for 5 years. It was just an amazing, amazing time. I call it the salad days. And unfortunately, the equally as long Trans-Sahelian Highway goes west to Dakar, Senegal, another ECOWAS house Negro, and not via Revolutionary Guinea, which has a deep water port in the capital of Conakry. So I will leave you fans with five big questions. One, are the house Negroes in ECOWAS going to die for Washington, Paris, and London by invading Niger, thus bringing Mali, Burkina Faso, and Wagner Group into the fray? Two, how does the Sahel Revolution evict NATO from Niger and gain control of its valuable uranium sources without a people's war? Or will it be like Syria, where NATO is occupying and stealing the people's oil? Three, can China's investments in oil and uranium compensate for the loss in revenue of the French-controlled Orano Uranium Mining Company, albeit which was just 11 euros a ton to the nation? Four, will the Sahel Revolution follow through on a full-fledged federation? And five, will the Sahel Revolution spread to the other ECOWAS countries, which their very corrupt imperial house Negro leaders clearly fear? That's all I have today, James. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jeff. That was a great trip through Africa. And this is JB East signing off.
And this is JB West on the D-Day beaches of Normandy. Thank you, James. Bye-bye.